No? Yeah, okay, they're on. Actually, Jeff, my real name is Jehu. And, yeah, it's named after the guy that drove that way in the Bible. Well, I'm excited to be here tonight and to be able to share with you. Turn your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 5. Ephesians chapter 5, verses 15 through 17. Ephesians 5, 15 through 17 tonight. Therefore, be careful how you walk, not as unwise men, but as wise, making the most of your time because the days are evil. So then do not be foolish, but understand what the will of the Lord is. Now, we're working with people. You know, we're out there, and I'm talking about personal evangelizing tonight. And I got a lot more to say about that than I can say in the next few minutes. But when you're working with people, you got to realize that you're dealing with anybody, anywhere. Actually, it was right here in Lancaster. You know, I saw a lady wearing a T-shirt, and you know, had a little saying on it. Said, how'd that go? She said, "I'm not suffering from insanity." She said, "I'm kind of enjoying it." You know, people are like that, you know. And I saw another one in the Bozeman Airport. The guy said, you know, with all his T-shirt, he said, "I'm in my own little world." He said, "But it's okay. They know me here." Well, one thing I can tell you is people put who they are. You know, they wear who they are. There's a guy in Great Falls, and he's a truck driver, a freight driver for FedEx. And he's got his hunting camp all set up, and his T-shirt says, "I didn't climb to the top of the food chain to be a vegetarian." So, you know, people tell you who they are, okay? So one of the things we've got to recognize is we're living in the midst of evil days. That part hasn't changed since Paul wrote Ephesians. It's a present evil age. And regardless of what continent people are on, regardless of what color their skin are, right underneath that skin, they're all the same. You know, there are the same personalities. When I get to go to Ghana, for example, I see guys there, and you know, their faces are dark, and I can't see where they are at nighttime very well. But you know, I know a guy back in the United States who's Cajun, and he's got a different name, but he's the same guy. You know. I mean, it's called, "I've seen this guy before." Okay, that's how it is. I go to the Philippines, and over there, they're not quite as dark as they are in Africa, but us white boys definitely stand out. And in the Philippines, and once again, I'm talking to this guy. I say, "You know, this is my first time to meet you, but I met your character several times before." See, that's the human race. We're real consistent across the board, and actually the analysis is evil. That's divine analysis. I don't know if you like that or not, but I think right here is probably a good place to pray, don't you? Let's do that. Father in heaven, we're very thankful to be here tonight and grateful for the opportunity to examine your word and to once again focus on what the mission of the church is and ways to get that carried out. Father, bless this particular message. May it be instructive and encouraging and motivating. And above all else, may it be consistent with the Scripture and you be glorified. In Jesus' name, amen. Amen. Personal evangelism. You know, we are going to be working with all kinds of people. And you better get used to it. I've been preaching for more than 35 years, and I can tell you there has been a shift in American society. It is not uncommon for me to perform a wedding, a real nice formal wedding, you know, outdoor garden setting, I mean, the guys all wearing tuxes and the gals all wearing dresses. And the audience, you know, the gals in the audience there in short shorts and thongs. Flip-flops. Okay? Yeah, that's how it is. Okay? Preaching a lot of work in Great Falls. Been working with a young lady and just a really nice gal. And she comes to assembly here a couple weeks ago and she's got a nice spring dress on. It's about this long. And, you know, she's gone to a lot of work to dress herself up and make herself presentable for the assembly. She's done that. And so she thinks that she's appropriately, maybe in fact a little bit overdressed. That's her perception on things. Now, I've been places where the old lady was, see that. Well, brethren, I'm just telling you, with the massive breakdown that we got in society, that you need to be prepared to welcome with open arms anybody that walks in there and get down with them and start living with them and helping them get to the next step in their lives. That's what Christianity is all about. And you're not willing to do that, we're not willing to do that, then we're not going to carry out the mission of Jesus Christ. How about our Lord Himself? Let's go back to Matthew chapter 9. This is, I just don't think you can get a worse setting than what it talks about in Matthew chapter 9. This is as low as I think it goes. Okay. Now in Matthew 9, Jesus walking by the tax collector's place, and so he stops in at the local IRS office and tells the guy that's in charge there to just kind of push those forms aside and come on. And so the guy does. Now that part's not so bad. I mean, okay. Maybe Jesus has got to have a guy that's involved in tax collecting as one of the apostles. Need to balance out the tax protester over here on the other side, Simon the Zealot. Okay. But what happens, I think, is really bad. I just don't think you get any lower than that. You know what Matthew the tax collector does? Throws a party and invites all his fellow tax collectors to come. And you know what? Jesus goes. Jesus goes. No, okay, you say, well, I don't see what's so bad. How come it's always the tax collectors and the harlots? Why is the prostitutes always lumped in there with these guys? Because that's how Jewish society thought of them. See, that's how low this is. See, and so Jesus is down there eating and drinking with the tax gatherers and the sinners. Matthew's glad to have him there, trying to introduce him to his buddies. See, and you recall the setting there. I mean, the Pharisees already worked in the crowd, trying to create a little bit of division between Jesus and disciples. Said, hey, you see that you're, you know, the guy that you've been following around here, traipsing around. You see who he's eating with here? And Jesus finds out about it. And he said, you know, you go tell those boys, I desire compassion, not a sacrifice. You know, I didn't come to call the righteous, but sinners. See, it isn't the well guys that need a physician, sick folks. And so, the question then, who's sick? Well, see, there's none righteous, not even one. None who understands. They've all turned aside. You know, together they become useless. There's none who does good. There's not even one. Their throat is an open grave, and with their tongue they keep deceiving. The poison of asps is under their lips. This doesn't sound really good. Their feet are swift to shed blood. Destruction and misery in their paths, the path of peace they have not known. There's no fear of God before their eyes. That sounds pretty sick, doesn't it? Okay. So, what are we supposed to see when we look out there? What are we supposed to see? People as they are. See them as Jesus sees them. You know, is he condemning them to that? Is he down on their case? No, he's... You know, I love these words out of the Gospel according to John. The Word became flesh and dwelt among us. Isn't Jesus in us? Jesus got right down in here and he mixed it right up with us. He came down to live where we live. He came down to lift us up. That's what he came down to do. We couldn't get up to his level on our own efforts, so he came down to ours. Awesome, if you think about it. Well, what are we supposed to do? Well, we're supposed to imitate that, aren't we? Now, that is where it involves personal evangelism. See, personal evangelism. Now, I got a son-in-law that, he's a Schwann's man. You know, he drives a big Schwann's truck all over, and he's good. I mean, he's originally from New York, Professor Sherry Dingman was his professor at university there in, name slips me, what is it? Marist, right. Marist, good Catholic university there in Poughkeepsie, New York. So Jason's from New York, and he's good at knocking on doors and, you know, telling them they like to buy some stuff. Hey, in New York City, it rains a little bit, there's guys selling the umbrellas, $25, the umbrella, right here, right? Now, us Montana folks, we're a little, you know, that's a little too pushy for us, but there are more people on Manhattan Island, and, you know, there are more cars in Manhattan Island running around without a parking space than people live in the state of Montana. So, you know, you've got to understand the difference, okay? So Jason, he's really good. You know, his route grows and, you know, he's one of the best. Because he's out there, he's knocking on doors, talking to customers and, you know, building those relationships. Now there's another guy. What he does is he takes his Schwann's truck and he parks it next to an intersection. That's a pretty good, it's a nice location, good intersection. You know, people got access there, and so he sells his stuff out of the truck. Okay? And a lot easier. I mean, people coming to him, and all he's got to do is, you know, take the orders and, you know, pull the stuff out of the truck and sit down and read his book until the next customer comes by. So how well do you think that route's growing? No. Okay, now I can tell you what happens. People think of the church building like that truck that's parked at the intersection. Called location, 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 right? And it's a lot easier if we can just get them to come in, you know. Come on in, y'all come, you know. Do you think it helped to get somebody in a Jesus suit standing out there on the street saying, yeah, y'all come? You think that helped? The gospel isn't really worked that way. You know, we're going to have to go get the sheep. So if we're going to do that, see, we've got to understand it's going to take mental commitment to do that. Now, as Mr. Mark Miller has been kind of working on in his message, it's not something that you're going to do unless you really want to. If you really want to do this, you're not going to do it. So, I'm talking to folks tonight that really want to do it. And the rest of you, if you want, go play on the lawn or, you know, something. You know, you can. That's all right. Because what does it take? What does it take to do personal evangelism? What does it really take? I mean, I talked about love this morning. And you really got to love people. And you've got to communicate to them that you love them. They got to know instantly. Instant contact. They got to know that you care for them. You're interested in them. With a little bit of practice, you get so that you can make connections with people really fast. I enjoy working with Jim Derry. Jim's good at that, by the way. But you know, we went up to see Rob O'Keefe in Columbus this afternoon. And so we're in the elevator, and there's this hospital gal working there, and she's got a couple stacks. And I always do stuff like that. And so I just looked at it and said, lunch. And, you know, she, real friendly. And see, well, what happened? Instant contact. See, there's a lot of little things you can do to make instant contact with people, and so where they know that you can care, you care. You know, Mark Miller was talking about the guy that gave him cell phone service, and Mark drew the little line through there. Hey, with all your skills, you'd be really awesome at presenting the gospel. You ever thought about that? Now, you might think, well, I don't know if that sort of thing really works. I don't know. Well, I can tell you a story about a guy that Mark Miller met that same way. Guy was selling televisions, if my memory is correct. And Mark Miller was able to drag some stuff through the conversation and get things going. And guy ended up being immersed. His name's David Cook. And I had the opportunity to hear that from David's side in the Philippines, because David is living in China, married a Chinese gal, and he had come to participate in the Philippines family camp and was excited to be there and did some really great teaching and preaching. So, you see, these sort of things work, but you gotta want to do it. You've gotta care for people. They gotta know that you cared. Every single conversation, you have to develop the idea that you care and you're communicating that. It's got to be part of it. See, otherwise, personal evangelism isn't going to work. How do you think it worked for Jesus to go to this tax gatherers meeting here and sit over in the corner by himself because he didn't feel real comfortable? Guy like me. I came because Matthew invited me, but I'm not. I mean, what if somebody really sees me here? I know they're already talking about me out there. What do you think Jesus is doing? I'll tell you what he's doing. He's shaking hands, if they did that in that culture. He's talking, he's sitting across the table, reclining table, getting a little conversation going. That's what he's doing. He's interacting with those people. And he's listening as well as he's talking. Because how are you going to show people you care right away? I can tell you, you got to listen. Jesus do that? Well, let's turn to John chapter 4, see if he did. Jesus had a long, tough day. Traveling. And so he's just not interested in talking to anybody. I mean, he's done for the day. Evangelism quits, when you're tired. That's when evangelism quits. But, maybe make an exception, all right? So he's there, and he's leaning up against Jacob's well. And about this time, the Samaritan woman came down to draw some water. So, how are we gonna have a little conversation opener here? See, I mean, she got a water pitcher, and she's there, and so Jesus says something real natural. Hey, can you give me a drink? They're making connection. Now, in Jesus' case, do you think the drink is more important or the woman's more important? What do you think? What would the rest of the Bible tell you is gonna be more important to Jesus? Is that a woman? So he says, hey, can you give me a drink? And she says, sure. And she's a little concerned because she says, how is it that you, being a Jew, talking to me, and I'm a Samaritan woman, no less, because everybody knows Jews they don't have any deals with Samaritans. And so Jesus comes back again. He said, well, if you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, give me a drink, you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water. Well, this is kind of proceeding. Now, what's he doing, though? He's listening. See, he's listening. See, she's a little uncomfortable. You mean you deal with me? Well, how about some living water? She said, you don't have anything to draw with. The well's deep. Where are you going to get that living water? You're not greater than our father Jacob, are you, who gave us the well and drank it himself and his sons and his cattle? Where are you going to get that? Did he listen to that? Paying close attention. He comes back with a little response and says, well, everybody who drinks of this water is going to thirst again. See, but whoever drinks of the water that I give, never going to thirst. That water is going to become in him a well of water springing up to eternal life. Say, well, give me some of this water. I'm sick and tired of putting this thing on my head, you know, coming down here to here and dipping it down and filling it up and pulling it up, putting it on my head and trudging back up the trail, to, you know, up the trail. I'm tired of that. Give me some of that water so I don't have to come all the way here to draw. Jesus said there, well, go get your husband. Bring him on down. She said, well, I don't have a husband. Jesus, is he listening? He listening real close. Right. You don't have a husband. You had five husbands, and the guy you're shacking up with right now, he's not your husband. Now, how do you know that? Well, I don't know exactly how he know that, but I think the lady probably drew the correct conclusion. She said, sir, I perceive you're a prophet. Now, I mean, you want to stop here, though, for just a second. You know, stop here and think about something. Now, who is Jesus? Well, he is the Word. He is God in human form. Everything about God dwelling in that body. Now, does he know this day that he's going to have a conversation with this woman at this well? Does he know that ahead of time? Oh, yeah. Is he interested in this woman? How come she's the one that comes down? Do you ever wonder about things like that? Why are certain people at certain places at certain times? You think these things happen by accident? Think there's something a little bit bigger going on. I'm telling you, Jesus is interested in this woman. He listens. He cares. And she's open with him. She said, you're right. I perceive your problem. I got a question for you. Why is she asking that question? She knows she can ask the question. She's not intimidated by Jesus' scary presence. She knows she can ask the question. See, what's he been communicating with all his nonverbals? Let's see. Is this the same guy that said, come to me, all who are weary and heavy laden, I'll give you rest? Is that the guy? So, is he going to stand here with this woman and put out the vibe, don't you touch me, don't you come near me? Now, I've got my cold pricklies on today. What is every part of his body language going to be saying? Let's talk. See, that's the key. That's the key to personal evangelism right there. It's very, very similar to, for lack of better terminology, door-to-door sales. It's not exactly the same, but there's some real parallels. Because you got to learn to ask for that Bible study. You got to learn to ask for it. Mark brought that up pretty well. If you don't ask for the business, you don't make the sale. And when I make contact with people, you know, I work around, probe around a little bit, see if I can find an interest. Say, hey, would you guys be interested in taking a look at the Bible? You got to have a lot of ways to introduce the conversation. One way, if you know enough, is the political situation. You know, now, you guys, a lot of you know that I've been saying, you know, that there's a big banking conspiracy that's intending on imposing a global new world order. I've been saying that for quite some time, and you know, a lot of folks said, you know, it'd be nice if you kept that crazy stuff out in Montana, that'd be better, but you know, nobody's saying that to me so much anymore, see, because, you know, some of the handwriting is showing up on the wall, and, you know, we can already see the initial trappings of a police state being set up. Okay? And you want to pay attention to those things. But if you know what you're talking about, see, everybody's concerned. You know, I was getting kind of shaggy, so stopped in the place where I get my haircut. And a bunch of good old boys down there in the haircutting place. And always before, it's the Main Street Barber Shop in Belgrade, is where it is. And a bunch of good old boys down there. And they ain't never been talking politics any time I ever been in there before. But they're talking politics. You know, and they're talking about the Tea Party, and they're talking about Obama, and they're talking about the regulations and the country going to pot, and how they like Sarah Palin, and, you know, and they really like to see her do a centerfold for Playboy, you know. Now, they're talking politics, see, they're interested, see, so you got to work with them where they are, right? And so I always get my little digs in. But if you know what you're talking about, see, and you've got enough what I call reserve firepower, you can take that conversation and you can direct that into something spiritual. You can take this. Hey, do you ever think that this country was founded on God, right, guys? Oh, yeah, you know, it was founded on God, you know, Washington, you know, I mean, all those guys. You know, everybody's seen pictures of George Washington praying at Valley Forge, you know. A lot of people don't know this, but George Washington gave orders to the officers of the Continental Army that they couldn't use any profanity. That if they were dependent upon God to help them win the victory, the officers couldn't use profanity. Do you think things like that make a difference? Do you think God maybe pays attention to things like that? Sounds like today's army, huh? Did you guys ever think about this country is founded on a belief in God? I mean, you boys like that Declaration of Independence, right? Yeah, like the Declaration of Independence. Brits never had one of them, right? You're right, never did. Yeah, that's the guys we busted away from back then, okay? See, didn't that have in there those words, we hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men were created equal, and granted by their Creator certain inalienable rights, rights of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness? I said, you know what's the difference between freedom and slavery? Is? Yeah, I said, you take the Soviet Constitution 1977 there. In there, they said that rights come from the Soviet Constitution or from Soviet law. So how much freedom do you think they had there in that Soviet Union? Well, not much. I said, look, and I'm telling you, whether you believe rights come from God or whether you believe rights come from your government, that's the difference between slavery and freedom. So you think maybe I need a little more emphasis on God in this country? Oh, yeah. But not right now. Okay. Well, you don't know. I'll probably get my hair cut there again. You know, conversation will continue. You think things like that don't work? I'm sitting there in a dentist chair and having my teeth cleaned. You know, and the lady, she's working, you know, she's got these picks out there making me bleed, you know. And she's telling me that she's having trouble with her 10-year-old son. Just can't make him behave. Just can't do anything with him. And just tearing things up in the public school. I said, well, you either think about Christian school, you know. Well, she thought about it for about 4 or 5 years. And then one day she enrolled her son in the school. He's about 14, 15 years old. Okay? Things went on, and he graduated and went on to school in Laramie, Wyoming. Came back, became a contractor, got married, and made contact with my son, Matt, who ended up being his high school teacher. You know, Matt went over and did some marriage stuff with them, you know, performed their wedding for them, started Bible study. And just several months ago, young guy got immersed into Christ. Now that's a story that has been 25 years in the making. 25 years in the making. See, I think I did read something about sowing seeds on time. When's the seed going to come up? I don't know. When's ready? But see, those conversations. I was listening. Well, I didn't have a whole lot of choice, you know. But I was listening. But I was willing to help. I actually ended up having Bible studies with her. And they kind of went nowhere because she couldn't ever get over the hump. You know, she just, I want to believe in God, but she said, I just can't believe that He's there. I want to, but I can't get there. And my first trip to Ghana, you know, I came back and I had my Bible. It was one like this, and same type Bible, a little bit smaller print. And it had grease all over it from the mosquito repellent that she wanted that Bible. She asked if she could have that Bible. I gave it to her. She's been attending assembly. Don't know, do you? Don't know. See, so you gotta be willing in your personal conversations in all kinds of settings. If you got some way to begin the conversation, there are lots of things you can use. You know? Ball games. You talk about sports. You know, some people are into sports. Well, what kind of principles do you need to win at sports? Would having a good self-image make a difference? I mean, are there any character issues in the NFL? We'll put it this way. Well, you see, you can turn these conversations into spiritual discussions. Say, hey, you know, one of the things I do is I do personal Bible studies. I really try to help people understand them. And boy, if you'd like to get together, I'd be happy to do so. I happen to be in Bozeman on Wednesday, and so if you want to study between 4:30 and 5:30, I can sure do that. Now, in my case, if you aren't going to study between 4:30 and 5:30 on Wednesday in Bozeman, you're not getting a Bible study with me in Bozeman. Okay, but that's how you do it. If I'm in Great Falls, you know, working up there, and say, you know, I got an open slot. I got one open slot right now on Thursday, 8 o'clock. And hey, if you want to, you know, I stay overnight Thursdays. You know, and if you want to go at about 10:30 on Thursday night, we can do that. You know what? People actually take you up on that. Now, I realize I'm a full-time preacher, and you know, and I got a lot more flexibility in my schedule than most people, and so you're going to be a little bit more limited as to when you can study. But the point is, you can do the same thing. See, I've got an open time slot here. Hey, if you can't do it on Thursday, maybe we can sort of swing something on Monday. Now, you ever go into a business and, you know, you kind of finish getting your stuff, and I don't know, do this so much anymore, but especially in a sit-down deal where you kind of sign a little contract, and the guy says, will that be check or cash? Yeah. Why is he saying that? Will that be check or cash, Jim? Is that there's a name for that. Can you help me out here, Jim? What's that called?
It's going to make a decision.
Oh, that's the close. Huh? That's the close, okay? See, because you got to find out. You got to find out. Are they really interested in the Bible study? See, try doing this. Well, you know, we all ought to get together for Bible study at some time. You know, I mean, sometime soon, maybe. Oh, yeah, I'd be interested. Oh, okay. Well, we'll see. You know, did you find out if they're really interested in the Bible study or not? No, you didn't find out anything. Say, when you say, hey, you know, Monday evening about 7:30, or hey, maybe Thursday about 8:30, If you got an open slot, that see, when you ask that question, you're going to find out if they really are interested in Bible study, if they're not. That's what you're going to find out. They'll say, well, you know, actually, now that I think about it, not right now, maybe this fall sometime. Okay? I'll check back with you this fall, if that's okay. Yeah, I will. I will check back this fall. I will remember. Okay. But see, you've got to find out. And that's how you do it. It's just something simple. Business people do it all the time. See, because they got to find out, are you interested in this product or are you not? Are you interested in this deal or aren't you? So will that be check or cash? You guys want to use, which credit card will you be using? Will it be MasterCard or Visa or Discover? You know? Well, that's called the close. That's what they're finding out. Are you serious about this or aren't you? See, because things start getting serious when money starts changing hands, in case you hadn't noticed. Okay? So, you got to do that in those personal Bible studies. You're not going to ever find out. Now, you might be a little bit uncomfortable with this at first. Say, well, I don't... I know when I first started, I'd go knock on people's door, and my first hope was that they weren't home. Yeah. You know, I'm past that. I'm past that. I go up and knock on people's door. Bam, 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 bam. Okay. I always knock instead of ringing the doorbell because there might be somebody sleeping. So I just knock on the door instead. Okay. No, you don't have to do it that way. That's just how I do it. Now, sometimes I don't get an answer. Okay? So what I do is I pull out my cell phone and I call. Say, hey, do we miss connections here? Or, you know, did I make a mistake? Or, oh, man, I spaced it. You forgot today was Thursday. I know that. Hey, tell you what, huh? I'll be back a couple hours, you know. Is that okay with me? You know, why am I a little bit persistent like that? Well, because I know what's at stake. I know that people say, I am not simply out trying to push a product and, hey, if I'm not making the sale, I'm moving on. I am there because I love those individual souls and I know the importance of that Bible study, even if they don't. Do you realize it's possible for a Christian to love that other person more than that person loves themselves? Do you know that? That's right. Love them more. You know what's at stake more than they do. I saw a study a while ago on insurance salesmen. And you know, it isn't whether a guy wears white shoes and a pink tie, you know, that gets the job done. It isn't whether he's tall or short. It isn't whether he's good looking or not so good looking. It doesn't matter what type of car he drives. It doesn't matter what kind of house he lives in or what neighborhood he lives in. You know what they found? You know what they found? The difference between the successful and uninsured salesman? The successful insurance salesman called back the fifth time. Called back the fifth time. There's a difference. Just stay with it. I thought you had to do something, be really genius or something around here. What do you mean, call him back the fifth time? Same thing in personal evangelism. Call back the fifth time. Stay with it. Another thing you got to do when you're in the personal Bible study and you get going, you got to give them assignments. Say, hey, you haven't ever read the Bible, huh? No. Had a Bible study with a couple not too long ago, ladies, actually, mother and daughter. And the mother said, you know, I'm so ashamed I'm so ashamed. You called, you left a message on my answering machine. This is going to be our first Bible study. And she said, I'm so ashamed that I almost didn't call you back. But she said, I did. I said, what are you ashamed about? She said, you know, I don't know anything about a Bible. I don't know anything at all about the Bible. I'm so ashamed of myself. I don't know anything about the Bible. How can you go to a Bible study and not know anything about the Bible? And I said, well, that's where I started. That's where I started. I said, I'm glad you're here. In fact, I got a Bible for you. Because she said, the only one I got's got all kinds of these and thous and notes and distance. And so I got one for you here. I said, it's even large print for you. Oh, thank you, you know. And hey, they've been great, great Bible studies. But you have to understand that they're a little scared, and sometimes maybe they're not interested. So you give them an assignment. I said, you never read the Bible? She said, no. So, well, I'll tell you what, start reading at Matthew. Don't start at Genesis because you're going to get bogged down at Leviticus. Okay? You're just going to go out there and die in the muck out there. So start reading Matthew. And if you get through Matthew this week, go ahead and start on John. See, simple little thing. Give them an assignment. Give them, you know, if they don't do the assignment, you know, what's your figure now? Aren't that interested? Now, you can't beg. You can't be a beggar for Bible study. I think I mentioned before, there's an old boy in Montana, pretty good sized rancher, and he said, you know, he said, I sold Mormon feed. That's M-O-O-R-M-A-N, feeds. And he said, for quite a while. He said, one thing I learned, he said, you can't sell anything if you're hungry. He said, you're no good at selling until you don't care whether they buy or not. You want your product? You want it the price that you can offer? Great. You don't? See, it's like me coming over here to Dale Calvin. And I got a plate of cookies here. I said, Dale Calvin, like a cookie? Nothing, no thank you. You like a cookie. How about you, Dustin? Come on, you got to have a cookie, buddy. All right, good, he wants a cookie. Now, I have to really not care whether Dale Calvin wanted that cookie or not. If he doesn't want the cookie, you know, hey, Dustin does. See, if I'm too hungry for my Bible studies, see, I got a desire, I got a want, I got to save soul, but I can't be too hungry. I can't be too desperate to have that Bible study. Because if I'm too desperate to have that Bible study, they're going to pick up on it. And then they're going to manipulate. Oh, people. People wouldn't manipulate, would they? See, when you're doing a Bible study, you're the teacher, they are the disciple. See, if you don't have that idea going in, not going to work. So, somebody that doesn't want to study, they're not going to do the homework. They're not going to follow the assignments. After a while, I figure out they aren't that interested. And so I kind of phase that study out and go off of the cookie to somebody else. One last thing in closing. It says, make the most of your time. Make the most of your time. Redeem the time. Let me ask you, what's the most important thing you can be doing on this planet right now? When I was in East Germany in 1994, went up on a big, tall TV tower. And up on that, it was on the what had been the formerly communist side. And you could see the border between East Berlin and West Berlin. It's 1994, just after Perestroika and Glasnost. You could actually see the border between East Berlin and West Berlin, kind of from skyline to skyline. You know why? West Berlin had color. Houses were painted. There were trees. There was life. East Berlin, You can see this. I still got the video. It's plain as the nose on your face. East Berlin, gray. Any paint was worn, drab, gone. And you guys have been to Belarus should have a pretty good idea what I'm talking about. Concrete, dead, dry, scraggly trees, nothing taken care of. That's what it's like when you have a communist system. That's what it's like when you have a socialist New World Order in place. Nobody takes care of anything because nobody owns anything. So I'm going to ask you, how much time are you going to spend taking care of that white picket fence that someday, very soon, the government's going to own? How much time are you going to spend just remodeling that house and getting her all fixed up just exactly the way you want it when there are going to be four families living in here? Think I'm kidding? See, at some point we have to, figure out how to set up our priorities. Well, I used to stack hay as a kid, you know, $8 a day, you know, for 12-hour days of stacking hay. All the things that, well, a lot of thunderstorms. Those thunderstorms that build up over the mountains in the west. You know, and when that thunderstorm got built up enough, it starts moving. Okay, moving east. Now, that valley that I lived in was only about 15 miles wide, and so it doesn't take that long for a thunderstorm to move across that thing. Now, when the farmers I was working for see that those clouds building up like that, you know what they start doing? They really start bringing in the hay. That guy's out there with a buck rake on the front of that tractor, and he's getting all the bales that are close. They got a guy standing at the bottom of that elevator sending that up, and up there, and that bales are coming over the top. See, and I'm having to stack that hay. You know, why are they bringing that hay in so fast? Because they see the storm. See, here's a basic principle. When you see the storm clouds in the west, get the harvest in. Go set up some personal Bible studies. Go make it happen. Drag some stuff through your conversations. Have a good time with it. And, oh, don't forget to love people. And that's who you're trying to save, is people. Let's stand.